Sounds to me like you're daunted. Say it again like you're undaunted.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Whenever you are listening to this, whenever you're watching this, this is the Often Daunted Podcast, and I am your host, Burke White. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. If you found your way to this depth of the well of Indiana content out there, I truly appreciate you for finding it. I am Burke, your host. If you're new to the show, do this show once a week, recapping what's happened with Indiana basketball. Now, as with that UNC game, UNC Greensboro game, with just how long it has been since that last tip and just how uninspiring that game was and how uninspiring it would be to talk about it. I just wanted to focus this week's episode on priming us for each of the possible opponents that we could possibly be facing in the game to come. You know, I did want to recap the game, but I wanted to get this episode out Monday for you. But if you ever just have a bad day turn worse, kids acting up in church turns into your three-year-old taking a rock to the side of your black truck to draw, and then it's just downhill from there. Absolutely downhill. One of those days. I can't apologize enough for not getting this episode out a day before, recapping that one a little better. But I just wanted to focus on the games to come, the possible opponents that we'll have with this huge MTE, the Battle for Atlantis. And for this episode, with the less enthusiastic showing again against UNCG, I just really wanted to focus more so on the upcoming Battle for Atlantis and just each of those seven opponents. Thank you for tuning in. You know, with the full-time job I have, I had a wedding this weekend, and that last Sunday, it just took me a bit longer to address the other seven teams I wanted to preview because there were seven teams I needed to preview for this one. I wanted to spend more time on it here, so that's what the bulk of this episode is going to be. I'm going to start with the previews this time around, and then I'll follow that up by sharing some of my short thoughts on the UNC Greensboro game at the top of the Indiana news. Following that, we'll get on to the national news. Then it'll be the Flaunted and the Daunted, as it is every week, your winners and losers. It'll be Burke's Big Five. This week, it is Burke's Big Five Big Ten member state birds. Yes, a very hot, interesting one. You're going to want to stick around for that. And then we will get you out of here with a selection of Today in Hoosier History for your Hoosier History hit today. All right, thank you so much. And yeah, as I didn't want to start this episode talking about how just uninspiring that UNC Greensboro game ultimately was, let's get right into the previews for Indiana's upcoming MTE, the big one, the Battle for Atlantis. Let's go. Episode, I wanted to provide a quick primer on each of the teams in the field, two key players for each squad, and a few of my thoughts on each of the possible seven opponents that Indiana has in this field. Yes, seven possible opponents for us. Then I'll be laying out what I think will happen in this battle for Atlantis, where the teams are at, key players, key matchups. It's all in this. So, also, the amount of time devoted to each probably speaks to where my attention is and the teams that I'm focusing on in this dream run for the Hoosiers here. So without further ado, let's get right into Louisville. Louisville, current record under Pat Kelsey, as the Kenny Payne era is finally over, and this is the first season of Pat Kelsey at the helm. He has the Cardinals currently sitting at 3-1 with a loss to Tennessee at home earlier this month. Currently on Torvik's rankings, because yes, we do need to mention them because they are the ones that are going to be determining actual seeding and shit for the tournament. So we need to discuss them. Louisville currently sits at number 55. That is with the overall adjusted ranking 55. Yeah, overall adjusted offense number 48 and the number 79 overall adjusted defense. The Hoosiers are currently 12-8 all-time against Louisville. Yeah, I just wanted to throw in some history. I'm a history major from Indiana. I love talking about the history of these matchups. And the Hoosiers, I'm just going to throw in a little spice every time I get an opportunity. The Hoosiers are 12-8 all-time against the Cardinals, winning the last two meetings between the two. And currently, the Vegas odds for Louisville to win this battle for Atlantis in the Bahamas is currently sitting at plus 1,000. Bet 100 bucks, make 1,000. Key players for Louisville in this game, Chucky Hepburn. You know his game. You know Chucky Hepburn's game. That's a familiar name. The Wisconsin transfer. He is currently averaging 10.5 points per game for the Louisville Cardinals and 4 assists. The 3-point volume from Chucky seems to have went down, but that could also speak to just Wisconsin's play style. He has made 4 of the 15 threes he's taken on the season. It's taken a while for him to really get going, and boy, did he look like he was having struggles in that Tennessee game, but that Tennessee defense had everyone having fits. Speaking of which, other people on the team, the other player I wanted to look out for was Terrence Edwards Jr. This guy is on his 5th season in college basketball, and he brings with him just crazy amount of experience from his 4 seasons at James Madison. Big size for his skill, averaging 12.3 points per game, 3.8 rebounds. And while I did say there was 2 players I wanted to mention for each team, for Louisville, since they are the primary matchup, I wanted to mention 3. And that third one is Rain Smith. Yes, Rain. Awesome name for a guy to come off your bench and absolutely drain buckets. Rain Smith leads the scoring off the bench this season with 14.8 points per game. Yes, he's leading scoring in total, but coming off the bench. He was on Charleston the 3 seasons prior with Pat Kelsey. He just lets it rip from 3 whenever he's got an opening. He is 16 for 38 on the season, and oftentimes he is looking like the best player that Louisville has. While he does do that, he can also look like, holy shit, this dude is allergic to getting buckets. He's hot and cold. One of those tends to show up in games against Indiana, and it's usually the hotter one. I'm really hoping that this kid doesn't have a breakout performance here against the Hoosiers. The Cardinals, like, they've gotten better at rebounding considering how abhorrent they were last year under Kenny Payne. That being said, the size that Indiana has, if they bring an ounce of consistency on the glass, which, I mean, should be easier. I mean, that is easier said than done with this Indiana team right now after that UNC Greensboro game. But it should be more than enough for Louisville to match. I haven't seen so much of it so far this season, but the size, the talent, it's there. Just light a fire under our own tails, and we can absolutely take it to Louisville on the boards, and that'll be a large determining factor in who wins this one. When they lost to Tennessee 55-77, every issue with this team seemed to be on full display. They really showed just that it's hard for this Louisville team to battle back from behind. Even when defending well, as they were in this game against Tennessee, they were defending well. They couldn't take advantage of those opportunities. That they just earned themselves, like, yeah, that Tennessee should have done a lot more damage to them regarding that. Oh, no, sorry. Louisville was unable to capitalize on that. Just something to note, they are able to get after it defensively a bit. Tennessee really bullied Louisville through aggression and physicality. You saw it on full display. We have the size to play that way. We just need the mentality. I don't know why it hasn't gotten through yet, but that'll be something to absolutely just keep an eye on. The aggression physicality that Tennessee came with, that is the blueprint for handling Louisville as soundly as they did. You saw Chucky Hepburn just get rattled by Zakai Ziegler. Yeah, my prism for viewing them is going to be through that Tennessee game because that's the best competition they've had. You saw Chucky Hepburn get rattled by Zakai Ziegler, and absolutely no shade there, but Chucky Hepburn has a speed advantage there against Zakai Ziegler, and it just seemed largely underutilized when Zakai was meeting him with superior strength and physicality. He wasn't trying to zig where Zakai was zagging. He was trying to match it, and he just was unable to. Tennessee turned the ball over 20 times in that game, and they still beat Louisville by 22 points. That just goes to show you just that those second chance opportunities that Louisville missed. Indiana, like, we were upset about 14 turnovers in the last game. Louisville will take advantage of errant ball movement, errant intention behind any of your passes, and unfortunately, they are not going to take less advantage than they did in this Tennessee game. There's no way they could take less advantage of that than they did in the Tennessee game. Tennessee neared down. They like bared down defensively, bared down defensively, and they made Louisville look to beat them one-on-one. If Indiana can face them into such a tempo and play style, I like the Hoosiers' chances. If you're talking one-on-one play, I would think that the Hoosiers' size, the athleticism, that gives us a chance over the course of 40. That gives us the better chance over the course of 40 minutes to win that one. We have the opportunity to really snuff out a new Louisville era before it starts here. And why not extend their dog days just a bit when we can? I really want to jump at the opportunity to daunt Louisville just a bit longer. It seems like Terrence and Chucky are both figuring out what they need to bring to the team. And the thing is, they came here to show out at those spots that they're currently sitting at. They came in here to show out at those spots to say, hey, I am a transcendent playmaker. I'm a transcendent athlete, and I can get it done. Unfortunately, it just hasn't been the extent of the case with this team right now. And here's hoping that that's fortunate for the Hoosiers. They are taking a little longer to find their stride and find their role in their new home. Tennessee made Louisville look like a JV team on the glass. Absolutely. I already spoke to that. We got the size. Show an ounce of grit and just bruise these birds down low. That's all you need to do. They are going to look to play fast, provide a speed bump every now and then, man. Just provide a speed bump. You see that guy going? Don't stick your elbow out. Don't get the foul. Just make them feel it. Wherever they're moving, make them feel it. And I really think that just little speed bumps like that will snowball on a team like this Louisville squad a little more aggressively, a little more rapidly than they would for some of our other major program opponents to come. Yeah, that's all I got for Louisville. Let's get on to Guns Down. Six to go. Gonzaga. Gonzaga's current record. Head coach Mark Few has the Bulldogs currently sitting at 5-0 after kicking the season's doors open by beating Baylor 101-63 and just kept it rolling since the start of the year. On Torvik currently, Gonzaga sits at number 4 overall with the number 1 adjusted offensive efficiency and the number 17 adjusted defensive efficiency. We are 2-2 all time against the Gonzaga Bulldogs, with the last game being a 70-54 butt whooping they handed us in Lucas Oil on December of 2008. Currently, the Bulldogs sit at +100 to win the battle for Atlantis. So what is the absolute fun in betting on them? Do not bet on them. You win $200 if they win the whole thing. I mean, with how good they've been playing, that might be good money, but some of the key players for the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Ryan Nemhard right at the top. Ryan Nemhard, even though he stated out, like he started out as the Big East freshman of the year, he made the switch to Gonzaga very well, earning all conference first team honors with his first season with Gonzaga last year. And he set the single season assist record with 243 at Gonzaga. This he sets the table and runs the offense like a true floor general, nearly averaging a double-double, 12.2 points per game, 9.4 assists. Through his first four games this season, he is one of two players across NBA, WNBA, and men's and women's college basketball to have at least 50 points, at least 40 assists, and 5 or less turnovers, and the only other player in basketball. I mean, that's basketball, NBA, WNBA, and both men's and women's college. The only other player in basketball to do that was 2014 LA Clippers, Chris Paul. And I mean, that character, the 2014 LA Clippers, Chris Paul, if you had 2K13, 2K14, that Chris Paul, legendary player. I whenever I just think of that 2014 LA Clippers team, I think they were just the most fun to play with. Lob City. Those were the days. Back on Ryan Nemhard. This all comes with him having less minutes to be responsible for, as well as Gonzaga just hasn't been asking him to do as much this season. He is absolutely taking his game to another level, and this Gonzaga team looks really solid right now. This is another team I did 3-4. I'm really hoping we play Gonzaga. I mean, so I did want to provide a little more for them. They also are aided in the backcourt by guard Khalif Battle, and this is the second guard for me of the true worry variety for the Bulldogs. He's made 12 of the 26 shots he's taken from deep. Absolute threat from range. Usually a problem for Indiana. He's made 12 of the 20. Oh, yep. I just said that. Really works his tail off to put himself in position on the glass. And currently he's averaging 14.4 points per game and 4.4 rebounds. They do shoot a lot of threes. That could speak to how he is able to get 4.4 rebounds. I don't think he has the most minutes, but it's going to be long rebounds with a team like Gonzaga. So the backcourt needs to step it up because our backcourt rebounding has been pretty abysmal as to date. And a team like Gonzaga just is going to take us for everything we're worth if that's the case. And that just keeps up for this if we were to play them in this game or in this tournament. The third player I wanted to bring up, Graham Ike. We all know Graham Ike. He last played us, I believe, in the first four matchup we had with Wyoming. Fourth season in college basketball for Graham Ike, second in the Mark Few system. Currently, he is only averaging 17.2 minutes per game, but he is still leading the team with 14.6 points per game and 6.2 rebounds per game. I think he was a third-team selection for All-American. This guy has some hype right now, and he's living up to it. I really thought that when he did make that shift to Gonzaga, just with what he showed me in that one matchup with Trace, nothing more than that, really. I just didn't think that it was going to work as well, maybe that great for him. But he's stepped up to the challenge, and then some. Graham Ike looks like he's holding it down for that front court, and Mark Few has to be just over the moon with the decision he made there. Overall notes on this team. Gonzaga is averaging 93.2 points per game. That's no small feat. No small feat. They get production from absolutely everywhere on the floor. In a game where Ryan Nemhard, who one should usually point to as their go-to primary scorer, like that's Ryan Nemhard. He's our go-to primary scorer. He only plays 24 minutes, and the Bulldogs end with 5 double-digit scores and 113 points. Like, however you slice it, 113 with your starters getting 20 minutes or so, that's production. That is production on every level. Like, that game being against UMass Lowell, sure. End of the day, 113 points is 113 points is 113 points in my book. The Gonzaga Bulldogs are currently shooting 38% from deep as a team, and I have to imagine that is with teams that defend the three better than Indiana has. So here's hoping that we can limit them the best we can, and we can find something that I hate to say it, that we haven't really seen in covering open shooters. Like that, I'm going crazy saying it on every episode, but cover open shooters. And I think we might have a chance here. They bring the intensity on the defensive end. They bring it on the glass. They just are intense. And it's so crazy that so many times with Indiana basketball, it's only the intensity you can point to because that's the easiest thing for anybody trying to argue against you to argue. Because how is that quantifiable? And it is like, man, anybody with two eyes and a heart, like they can see it. Two eyes and a beat in your chest, and you can see what's going on. Not to say that about, not to drill that about Indiana, but it is quantifiable. You can see it. And Gonzaga has it in spades, whatever it is. The absolutely unselfish, like the top five scorers for Gonzaga. 14.6 points per game, 14.4 points per game, 14 points per game, 12.2 points per game, 11.2 points per game. Like I said, total, utterly evenly distributed production. They play fast, 18.6 fast break points per game compared to Indiana's very respectable 14.75. But that's just like how much faster Gonzaga is to the average team. That is why they are the third overall ranked Torvik team. For the key matchup for me in this one, I could say players, it's backcourt rebounding. There's going to be long shots, long rebounds. God dang it. Indiana guards, put a body on somebody, box them out, and let's get the advantage there. It's going to go the longest way in winning this one, possibly for the Hoosiers. Next up on the docket is the primer for West Virginia. Let's get into it. West Virginia, currently head coach Darian DeVries is trying to pull together the rubble that was left following the Huggy implosion and doing so with his son Tucker in tow. He currently has West Virginia at 3-1 with that lone loss coming at the hands of Pitt. West Virginia is currently sitting at number 69 overall on Torvik with the 81 adjusted offense and the 63rd adjusted defense. I'm not kidding. I tried to find the all-time record against West Virginia for IU, and I can't find anything on us ever playing them ever. If you do know, please comment below on the video or go ahead and tweet at me, X at me, Blue Sky. Yeah, now I'm Blue Sky. Go ahead and follow me everywhere. At Often Daunted. Yeah, I didn't even say it at the top of the show. At Often Daunted. Follow me everywhere. Currently, West Virginia is sitting at plus 3,500 to win this tournament. Put $100 down, make $3,500. Sounds like Vegas doesn't think they really have a shot to win this one, and I kind of agree with Vegas. At the end of the day, anybody has a shot. It's 40 minutes of basketball. Teams go cold. You don't know what happens, but yeah, with this one, no, they don't really have that much faith in the Mountaineers. Key players for the Mountaineers currently are going to be Javon Small. That is the 6'3 guard, number 7 from South Bend, Indiana. He is coming off a game in which he had 23 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He shot 5-for-9 from deep in that game. And in the last few games, he's really been looking to take more shots and honestly, in turn, has been making more shots. Javon Small, his game continues to grow big. He is averaging 15.5 points per game, 4 assists, 3.3 rebounds. The other key player, like I said before, Tucker DeVries, the 6'7 guard, number 12 on the court. He has got the green light per daddy's orders, and I'm sure, like, rightfully so. He can shoot the hell out of the ball. He is tough. He plays hard, sets hard screens, like real coach's son in that way. Probably a huge reason why his dad got the West Virginia job. But all things considered, who cares? Like, well done to the DeVries family for pulling one over on West Virginia. Currently, he is averaging 13.5 points per game, 4.8 rebounds per game, and 2.5 assists. He does it all well and is currently shooting the three at a 40.7% clip. Key trades for this team, notes for this team. Like most teams, that if they're making their shots, like, their opponent is in trouble. End of story. Coming off of a win over Iona, where they hit 15 deep threes, like, they will always look for the extra pass. You can see it in their game plan, in the way they play. They're always looking for the extra pass, always looking for the open three, and that's the plan. Currently, they currently have three players who are shooting at least 40%, 40.7% from three on the field. From three on the year. Personally, I don't think they have a typical power five strength in the front court. I think they are lacking there. You'll more than likely feel like it's an army of guards that we're facing with if we were to face off with the West Virginia Mountaineers, which by some miracle they were able to. I'm counting on the Hoosiers to win. So by some miracle, if they were able to beat Gonzaga and we were to play them, that I really feel like front court, they are lacking in that regard. Amani Hansberry, he is their primary front court centerpiece at 6'8", 240 pounds. He is currently averaging 9.3 points per game, 7.5 rebounds, and 1.3 assists. Indiana is a bad matchup for West Virginia because Indiana should be able to dictate the interior. I would have said the same about UNCG. I would have think our size would have dictated that one, but I really think that to be the case here against West Virginia. A lot of their offense can turn into Tucker and Javon Small playing a two-man game on one side of the court while the other three Mountaineers just go to the other. They're like, hey, we're playing two-on-two over here. You guys go take a breather. They tend to really force it into some unfavorable shots when that's the case, I think. But that being said, they also make those at a pretty surprising clip. So not the worst game plan, just going with your two best players trying to match up against two athletically defensive guards. That 24-point loss to Pitt against West Virginia, that like Pitt's probably good. Pitt is a good basketball team, but it was a loud loss. That was a terrifyingly loud loss if you were a fan of West Virginia. Even though they did follow that up by doubling up Iona 43-86, nonetheless, that Pitt loss could come back to haunt them. And like bad showings in this MTE, you play the wrong opponents, you don't get opportunities to play the better ones. Like that could be a scar on their, I mean, it will be a scar no matter what on their resume to come, but it could just be the nail in the coffin. On to the Oklahoma Sooners. The Oklahoma Sooners are led by Porter Moser in his fourth year as head coach, and he is still looking for his first NCAA tournament bid as the head of the Sooners. Currently, he has them at 4-0, having beat a bunch of schools he absolutely should have beaten. Oklahoma currently sits on Torvik as the 61 overall team, with the 64th adjusted offense and the 64th adjusted defense. Definition of major power five program mid, I guess. The Hoosiers are 4-1 all time against the Oklahoma Sooners, having won the last three since a March Madness showdown started that streak in 1983. Currently, the Oklahoma Sooners are plus 1,700 to win the battle for Atlantis, and two key players for the Oklahoma Sooners. First off, I'm going to start with Jalen Moore. Jalen Moore, the 6'7 forward, is in his second year with Porter Moser, after starting with two seasons at Georgia Tech. Currently, he is averaging 18.8 points per game and 26.3 minutes per game. He made 7 of 18 shots he's taken from deep for a respectable 38.9% from deep, all while averaging 6.3 rebounds, being able to find the glass against sometimes just larger, stronger opponents. He has a nose for the ball. Jeremiah Fears, the other name to mention. Jeremiah Fears, that is a name that you should know if you keep in the know of, just Big Ten recruiting. That was the one recruit who had decommitted from Illinois last season prior to them picking up that Will Riley commit. While less than efficient from deep right now, 26.7%, he still converts from the floor at 51%. Currently, he is averaging 15.5 points per game, 4 assists, and 3.5 rebounds in 27.3 minutes per game as a true freshman. Honestly, watching how he operates in this offense, I would have to think his decommitment might have come due to a few promises that Porter Moser had made from the Oklahoma side. He really has the keys to the kingdom. He gets to drive this car where he wants to go. Jeremiah Fears runs the show, and here's hoping that we should be able to get to a freshman guard with Miles. Anyone on our backcourt side defensively should we face down with the Oklahoma Sooners. And just a few thoughts on them, notes on them. I think that Oklahoma basketball is one of the biggest Snorro-Boro brands there is, like maybe on earth. Even Blake Griffin couldn't make them exciting for me. That's crazy. Maybe they do play exciting. Blake Griffin played exciting. I just can't bring myself to watch much of Oklahoma basketball. I don't know why. Just a personal inherent bias. Maybe it's the colors looking so close to mine and then maybe just being sour on them for not being Indiana. But I don't know what it is about the brand. I just can't get behind it. I don't like it. They haven't played anyone on this season. Yeah, that's my thoughts on the branding, but they haven't played anyone on the season, but everyone they have played, they've handled resoundingly beside a 16-point win over the Northwestern State team. But even then, this is their first even just sniff of competent competition. And, however this game, this tournament goes, I'm really thinking Porter Moser wants the wants the Oklahoma Sooners to have a solid outing, because he's absolutely got to be feeling the heat from his seat. He's got to be feeling the hot seat, just not having made that tournament in 4 years. Pressure makes diamonds, so maybe he can show up here and really have a resume-building run in this tournament for the Oklahoma Sooners. I got on the Sooners, not much thoughts on them. Providence Friars, let's get into them. the Providence Friars. The rambunctious Kim English has the Friars sitting at 5-0, but boy, has it been rocky getting there, including some close calls, including a game with Green Bay that looked a lot closer than a 14-point differential would have you believe, as well as just having to scrape one out against Central Connecticut to start the season. There have been times that this Providence team has struggled. They currently sit at number 78 overall on the Torvik rankings, with the 126th adjusted offense and the 41st adjusted defense. Currently, they are at plus 2,500 odds. Plus 2,500 odds. To win the entire battle for Atlantis. For their key players, I wanted to present these two. First being Jaden Pierre, the 6'2 guard. He wears number one on the floor. He has taken a junior jump as a veteran of this Kim English system, and he has moved up just pretty much in most every major stat category. He's got quick speed, quick handles, but is usually looking to create for himself rather than others initially. So this is the type of guy where I'm thinking, like, if we were to face off with Providence, just this is another. Just bump him on each drive. He looks to take, get a hand up, and I think we'll be okay. What am I talking about? Put a hand up. Just bother shooters, and the Hoosiers will be fine. He's currently shooting 51.4% from the floor, so someone to absolutely keep an eye on for the Friars. The other Friar to look out for has not played a minute of college basketball this season, but he is absolutely on my radar, as he is the biggest question mark, the biggest storyline, the biggest narrative for the Friars right now, Bryce Hopkins. The 6'7 forward wears number 23 on the floor, really talented, tore his ACL on January 4th last season, and his return has been the Friars' main storyline. Prior to going down last season, he was averaging 15.5 points per game, 8.6 rebounds in about 33.5 minutes per game, and was by all measure like the Friars certified star. This guy has NBA dreams. He has draft dreams. And speaking on whether he's coming back or not, Providence coach Kim English had to say, we don't know. He practiced full go. He had a great day, 5-on-5, 1-on-1, did everything for the first day. And in this is me now, he absolutely wants to go pro. So I'm sure it's time to put up or shut up if he wants to show that he's still got the legs to do it, that he can still go out there and compete. There's mumbles about it being like, let's wait until we have real competition and then I'll go play competitive ball. But he is somebody to look out for, because if he takes the floor with 100% of what he had last season, he will be a problem. Kim English is more than likely looking to run a four guard lineup. It's just the way he's run Providence so far, four guards. The bigs have struggled to really make an impact against what is weak competition that Providence has been taking on all season. So I would imagine he is going to look to rely on those guards against this stiffer competition. This is a team very much still learning how to play together, like as is the case with everyone. But they are liable to show up as two different teams in any two different halves. Can be very lazy, lackadaisical. And, they had a 1-2 Green Bay tied at halftime of their meeting. That being said, I mean, that is a trait of a team that Indiana fans should be able to relate to. I said in the preview of our Eastern Illinois game, that was the floor and the ceiling of Indiana basketball all in one game. And these growing pains, they are aplenty for most programs looking to build through the portal. But this Providence team really does have some right now. Kim English, he is a guy that absolutely coaches with his gut. He will ride the hot hand, make halftime adjustments, and throw whatever's necessary at the wall, just trying to win any given game. He will, like, whenever I said he will ride the hot hand, whoever reveals themselves to be the hot hand, that's his new favorite player. Like he's so willing to just push guys' minutes, given whatever the case may be on a given day. Although it's been against scrubs, they are holding teams to 53.6 points per game. That is impressive defense. That kind of intensity on that end will keep you in most matchups. And here's hoping that Indiana can kind of fix those numbers with them being the first. Or here's hoping that if Indiana were to play them, they could also aid in adjusting that mean a little north. The next opponent I wanted to cover was Davidson. Head coach Matt McKillop, has led the Davidson Wildcats to a perfect 4-0 start so far on the year. IU has won the only game between the two programs. Currently, the Davidson Wildcats are sitting at plus $5,500 to win. Key players on the Davidson Wildcats to be discussed is, first of all, Reed Bailey, the 6'10 forward, 3 seasons of experience with Davidson. He does a bit of it all for them from the front court, averaging 19 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, and 3 assists in 27.8 minutes per game. He presents some serious size and for some serious skill for a mid-major big man. He is truly impressive compared to most of his opponents, most of his, comparable opponents. And that being said, his size is impressive, but our size shouldn't have a problem handling him at all. He doesn't look to test the range, and he hasn't taken a three like yet in the whole season. So I can't imagine he'll be looking to do much away from the basket. Somebody that Indiana needs to look to, because I have to imagine a guy like that, if he's able to get that many points per game, that many rebounds at a school like Davidson, like he's working his tail off. So it's going to be hard to match the energy of a guy like that if we aren't looking to bring it down, if we don't pack it for the Bahamas, end of story. Like, it needs to be packed. The other name I wanted to mention was a guy off the bench. This guy isn't going to be talked about much, but he is the name that I personally have circled if the Hoosiers were to play Davidson, because this Roberts Blums guy, 6'4 guard, wears number 45. Weird number. There's my first, okay, that stinks to me. Weird number, 45. That sounds weird and dangerous. Comes off the bench as a 6'4 guard out of Latvia. Latvian. I mean, no offense, but the Euro guys are pretty unpredictable. That scares me. Dangerous. Not leading. He's not leading Davidson in any given category, but this kid is liable to just be the single one that I could think would be uncharacteristically unconscious in an Indiana Davidson matchup. If you get where I'm going, he would be that guy that had that game against Indiana. He's absolutely, if you look at him, he is Davidson's most pure shooter. He has the green light and definitely shows that off. He's shooting 31% from deep, nothing impressive. That's actually terrible. But from the little that I've watched, this guy's stinks of the guy that's going to hit 4 threes in 3 minutes. I don't know. That is a bad number, 31%. He will go up from there, but He is absolutely the guy that'll just have a uncharacteristically awesome game against the Hoosiers, as those guys tend to pop up. Notes on the Davidson Wildcats. 3 of their returning starters, Connor Cochera, Reed Bailey, and Bobby Durkin, are all averaging at least 16 points per game. And last season, they had played 15 games decided by 5 points or fewer. They did lose 11 of those. But experience like that in close games like that, it's going to be invaluable to those 3 returning starters who can impart what they learned on their teammates. This is a solid program for what they are, but what they are is a bad opponent to be dealt if you are playing in the battle for Atlantis. You can't talk yourself into this being anything but a bad loss if we were to lose to Davidson. You can't talk yourself into it. The other teams in this collection, this MTE, should beat Davidson and the resources that Davidson has. the last opponent I was going to bring up. Yeah, we're on to the last one. Yeah. Arizona. Tommy Lloyd currently has Arizona sitting at 2-2. Yeah, a gross 2-2 after dropping their last two games against Wisconsin and Duke. Absolutely respectable losses. Gross 2-2. It is 2-2, however you cut it, like to start your season. Gross. Like respectable losses with Wisconsin and Duke. I'm sure Tommy Lloyd is looking to salvage those two losses like ASAP with a tournament win. But here's hoping that the Hoosiers have something to say about that should they meet in the, it would be the championship game. Currently, Arizona sits at plus 260 to win. Key players I wanted to mention for the Arizona Wildcats. Yeah, I'm not mentioning Caleb Love. Kevin Love would be a problem. Kevin Love would be a real problem. I'm not mentioning Caleb Love because guess what? If Caleb Love goes cold, Indiana's probably going to win a game in which they play Arizona. And if Caleb Love goes hot, Indiana's probably going to lose a game in which they play Arizona. That being said, I wanted to bring up Jaden Bradley, the 6'3 guard, wears number 0 on the floor. He had 18 points, 8 for 16 from the floor with 3 assists against Duke. He was their lone shining star of that game, the lone bright spot. He did well to limit whoever he was guarding in that Duke game. He plays strong defense. He has been the most reliable of Arizona's guards, bringing the game just game in, game out. He has it every time on the floor. Currently, he is averaging 15.5 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, and 2.5 assists on 50% shooting. The other name I wanted to bring up was Trey Townsend. Trey Townsend, the 6'6 forward out of Oakland, wears number 4 on the floor. He was the 2024 Mid-Major Player of the Year, the 2024 Horizon League Player of the Year, and he just has not lived up to the hype that had come from Oakland taking down Kentucky, and with him having 17 points and 12 rebounds in that game. Currently, he is averaging 8 points per game, 5 rebounds, and mostly from the 4 spot with 24.5 minutes per game. He has done just little to effectively spread the floor for Arizona, going 0 for 5 from deep on the season so far. I wanted to bring him up, not because he's someone to look out for, just because, I mean, with Arizona's expectations where they were, a lot of those expectations being as high as they were dependent on Trey Townsend delivering a, you know, mid-major player of the year transfer performance for them reliably. So with those two losses they have, again, respectable losses. But I think if there's a time to get Arizona, it's now. Caleb Love has not been looking to test the interior defensively. He just does not look to get in there. He is being a complete jump shooter this season. If there's a time to get them, it's right now. I really think the Duke game kind of shed a light on just how athletic the Blue Devils were, but also how uncharacteristically slow and non-superior athletically Arizona could possibly be. In both of the Wildcats losses, they shot a combined 10 for 46 from deep. If you're taking 46 shots and you're only making 10 from 3, that's 21.7%. That is a bad day at the office. They just do not have the range that they opened up last season with. Honestly, odd considering that it's Tommy Lloyd, but this may be the first team he's had that's had a better defense than it has an offense. This is the first, like, defensively, like, I would say minded, but I think they're offensively minded. They're just better at defense. They just aren't very good offensively. This is his first better offense, like, defensively team. They had only scored 55 points in that Duke game, but Tommy Lloyd will have these guys primed as possible to put on a show here and make up for that. They aren't winning these games in the non-conference. This is his, you know, this is what he's going to build his resume on. And it is absolutely a dangerous opponent to play because he has a lot to lose. They have not had a good showing. Arizona's going to be hungry. And, you know, a hungry Arizona, I bet they can come up. They can show up for these MTEs. I don't know why I think that. I just think Tommy Lloyd will get the most out of these Arizona Wildcats, and they're going to be a competitive team in this one. Lastly, I wanted to bring up the Hoosiers. Well, my thoughts on the Hoosiers in this MTE, a little primer for us. Currently, the Hoosiers are sitting at plus 600, and that is a fun number. It says it can happen, and it'll all be worth it. Like, that is a number that said Indiana could win this tournament, and, you know, you'll also make money on. Fun number, keep that in mind. We need front court attitude and aggression more than anything. As basic as that seems, in this tournament, we need front court aggression more than anything, especially with Louisville. Like, they folded so aggressively when faced with physicality, when faced with tenacity, when just being asked to challenge the individual aggression of Tennessee's personnel. If Miles Rice isn't on the floor, another thought, if Miles Rice isn't on the floor, we need a solution for how the offense just keeps flowing and maintains any sort of continuity or fluidity. But when Miles Rice is on the floor, we just need to keep riding him. Like, he's incredible at creating for himself. He's incredible at creating for others. I just want him to keep being incredible on the floor. It might be selfish, but man, if he says something, pull him out. If he's tired, pull him out. But let's ride the hot hand. Let's ride a hot hand this MTE. What do you say? Incredibly selfishly, I just want Luke Good to have a moment in which he hits four straight three-pointers from deep, kick-starting his season. It's been a long, drag-out season getting Luke Good going. He was able to hit one of the two he took in that UNCG game. Shout out to him. But more shooting, more three-pointers. Let's keep it rolling. Hoosiers, find a rhythm, a sustainable one. Don't platoon substitute if that is going to lead to a screeching halt in production. We don't play solid enough defensively right now to afford any of that. Speaking of playing solid defensively, aggression on the boards. All I want to see in this is aggression on the boards. I want Indiana to rebound like a team that is tall as hell, because God dang it, Indiana is a team that is tall as hell. There is no reason that we should be having the struggles that we do in rebounding the basketball, even on the outside. We have size at the guard position. These guys need to be putting their asses into somebody else and boxing out. It's getting tiring having to ask for that 3 years now, but here we are, man. Let's go. Let's see it. I truly believe we can see it as far as what I see in this tournament bracket. My prediction for the Battle for Atlantis, starting with the Indiana-Louisville game. Indiana's winning that one. Louisville's going to the losers. Gonzaga-West Virginia. Gonzaga's moving on. West Virginia to the losers. Oklahoma State-Providence. Providence is going to move on. Psych. Like I just previewed, what's his name? Bryson for Providence. That I don't know if he'll play. I don't think he'll play. Let's take Oklahoma. I don't know. Yeah, I'm feeling Oklahoma. Oklahoma's moving on that one. Then it's between Davidson and Arizona. Arizona's going to be able to handle Davidson handedly. In that final four of the winner's bracket, you've got Indiana and Gonzaga. F-I'ma do. Can't give it. I got to give Purdue credit, a little credit for that one. It's pretty good. If I'm a do not take the Hoosiers. I think we can get this Gonzaga team on the right night. And I think if there is some, like, they're going to rely on 3-point shooting. If there's somewhere that 3-point shooting can get a little wonky, it might be a hotel ballroom. So there we go. That's what I'm hoping for that one. No, we have the talent. We have the size. We can absolutely play them. It's just, we just need to bring all the not intangibles, all the stuff you can't measure, but that your eyes can see. I promise you, your eyes can see it. And then we'll be fine. Arizona, Indiana. You guys, I'm taking Indiana. I think Indiana can win this tournament. I think that, I, I, I want. I can't even say I think now. I'm going to say before this one, I want Indiana to find it in themselves, to find that gear, to find that drive, to find that intensity that lesser teams bring to Assembly Hall quite frequently. And because they have the talent that if they brought three-fourths of what their opposition was working with sometimes, the talent alone would carry them to such heights. I just want it all for them. I want it all for them. I want it all for us. I want the battle for Atlantis to be the Hoosiers. Let's go down there and take care of business. On to the Indiana news. First up for your Indiana news. That was something. That Indiana football game. We were in it. We were in it. Those two mistakes we had at the end of that half killed us. They killed all momentum. It killed everything we had going into that. It killed us. I need the Hoosiers to bounce back. Here's hoping that they can. You know, this season, it's no less magical. Like, it's still the single most magical season in IU football history, and I can't thank Kurt Cignetti enough for giving it to each of us. That being said, it's on to Purdue. It's hate week, baby. Get it out. Get it flowing. Get it going. Down with Purdue. Let's go get that bucket, boys. Top of the news. Despite what may feel like a deflating 11-point win over UNCG, Indiana has moved up in the polls. This week we are premiering at the number 14 spot in the AP polls. That is up two. And I thought that our against the spread is how I measure how we're going to do against computers. If you beat the spread, you probably beat the computer that decided the spread, so you're beating the computers. Unfortunately, we did not beat the spread in that UNCG game, but nonetheless, we were able to move up in the polls. People, I'm so pro human. If you're pro machine, like, come on. I am saying that into a microphone, and the machines are definitely adding me to a list, but just be pro human. I like the AP poll. Number 14, Hoosiers. I wanted to give a shout out in the Indiana news to IU Twitter user Will Portnoy, who shared his post Thursday of him truly doing the Lord's work. He was at Capitol Hill with a sign that says Sig pays players, coach Tuberville can't pay for dinner. The other side said the other side of the sign said never daunted IU. Will had showed up outside of Tommy Tuberville's office with the sign just to, share his displeasure with Tuberville's take on Cignetti buying a football team. Go, yeah. Tommy Tuberville, save it. Save it, Tubes. Tubes, you goobs. Indiana men's soccer has been selected as the 14th national seed and will receive a first-round bye in the NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament. Let me see if they've played that yet. Put these notes, the little insight to the show. I put these notes down as the week accrues. Oh, there we go, boys. All right. So I'm going to say good showing. Good showing for Indiana soccer with the 2-1 golden goal victory over Akron. They have advanced in the NCAA tournament and will be moving on to the NCAA men's Sweet 16. Indiana will be taking on Denver next Saturday in that Sweet 16 matchup. If they are to win that one, they would play the winner of the Virginia-Massachusetts matchup in the Elite Eight for the chance to go to the College Cup. Well done. Indiana men's soccer just continues to be a tradition of winning. Indiana has reached the round of 16 in 9 consecutive seasons. So, yeah, that was the note from before. In 10 consecutive seasons, well done, guys. A decade of Sweet 16 appearances for Indiana men's soccer. This is Todd Yeagley's 14th time receiving a national seed, and that goes to the top 16 teams in the country. This week, Hoosiers Connect announced an official sponsorship, an official partnership in which they will be launching camps related to the various sports involving our student athletes. And I think it's an awesome initiative. If you have any kids who may be involved with sports at this time, why not have them trained by a Hoosier? This stuff definitely helps us out. It helps us sell ourselves to recruits, helps us go out in the transfer portal and get guys because they want to be a part of such a live community. Awesome to see that Hoosier Connect. They are not stagnant. They go and get it. They are constantly searching for the next way in which Indiana can bring opportunity to these athletes. Well done. Another note on Indiana news, please go out and check Fanta's latest story on the Indiana Hoosiers on Fox Sports. It is titled Mike Woodson Has Hoosiers Dreaming Big. I expect us to play at a high level and win. Awesome read. I just love Fanta's work. I didn't want to share any of his work here because you know what? He's the type of guy I'm going to say, just go. I'm going to go point you to him. His work, you should go. I don't need to be a mouthpiece for that. I love Fanta. Other news, Indiana's growing in the computer numbers, and we're doing just fine, guys. Sitting at 30 right now. No need to freak out. A lighter day on the Indiana news. Let's just get on to the national news. Oh, my gosh, I didn't even recap the game. Okay, no, back to the game. UNCG, real quick. Jeez. Just what started as a promising quick start ultimately ended up as a lethargic showing. I'll take the win, but the team looked dogged after the initial blows were thrown. How can we keep the momentum? I asked myself that pretty routinely. Hoosier ball security was very bad in that one. 14 turnovers. Again, a team like Louisville is going to make us pay for 14 turnovers, far more than this UNCG team did. Defensively, once Indiana's offense let up, the defense did toe right. Like, they just followed suit right in hand. And with that defense went the rebounding. Long rebounding. Backcourt needed to body up their men. I mean, that's where a lot of the frustration with the primers went, with me just being like, guards need to body. If guards can body these guys, that won't be a problem. Guards need to body on rebounding. Guards, yeah, just everybody. Get a body on a body. 17 offensive rebounds for UNCG. Thank God for only 10 points off of those. 5 for 19 from 3. Just, yeah, rough day. 9 points from each of the starters in the front court. You know, Balo looked just tired and a step slow, even with those 11 rebounds. He continues to look just a step slow. He has yet to have been the dude that I saw in Vegas 2 years ago. And, you know, I would say, oh, that's not fair. That was a sample size of one. But I would also say that was 2 years ago, man. I would think you got even better. I think McKenzie's efficiency struggles in this game were a blip. You know, nothing more. Probably wasn't going to hit at the efficiency that he opened the season, but but we will continue to get more from McKenzie. This was just a lackluster outing, fueled by a lackluster attitude, aggression, whatever it may have been for the Hoosiers as a whole. When the offense is stagnant, McKenzie is not going to find his spots, and that is just what you saw a lot of out there today, or a lot of out there in that game. Some positives from the UNCG game. Miles is and appears to be able to continue to be that dude. So as long as we have Miles, I like our chances. Like I do. He is the type of player that could go win you one even when everybody's trying to lose it. Just a truly special talent. Over the moon we have him. So glad we got him. Bryson Tucker in that game, he was your player of the game for me. Bryson Tucker, I believe it's his second because I counted an exhibition from earlier. Second on the season for Bryson Tucker, player of the game. He just carried so much of the production in that second half, so much more than he should have been responsible for. But that's why I love the fact we got Bryson Tucker. I said it last episode. This dude has no lack of confidence, and he is the break in case of emergency button is broken button. Like, you hit that button in case the first button's broken. It's just so nice to have that in your in the depth of your back pocket, not even in your back pocket. Like, long rebounding still an issue throughout in that game, and it's just going to persist unless something is dealt with prior to Atlantis, unless the right words are spoken to these guys prior to Atlantis. Because you can't tell me they just can't do it because they're superior athletic specimens compared to half the opponent, more than half the opponents they play. So figure it out. All right, that was all the Indiana news. That was just a collection of my thoughts of that one. So on to the national news. News for you. I was just able to watch Dan Hurley cry himself into an L as UConn lost 97-99 to Memphis in Maui. It was just awesome to see UConn losing in the first round. They are now in the loser's bracket for Maui. They will be in the loser's bracket for the next 3 days. Awesome to see Dan Hurley getting the technical. I think Liam got one too. It was just a fun hate watch for a Hoosier fan, or just a fan of just anybody who's tired of Hurley's shtick. Other national news right now, Ryan Russillo. That's all I mean. He could say all he wants about Indiana, but the SEC crapped down their leg. And yeah. I mean, you can't even, we're in. End of story. We're in. Well, who else? We're in. Reported by Pete Thames and David Purdom, feds are investigating ex-Temple player for alleged point shaving. There are bigger podcasts to hear this story from. I would point you in that direction because I'm not trying to get into the legal mumbo jumbo of this Temple point shaving story. But apparently this is the tip of the iceberg, and that, I mean, that tip being Heiser Miller betting on his own games and manipulating the outcome of Al's games for during his time at Temple. And apparently you go back, you watch the tape, it's pretty egregious. There were other FBI authorities that involved other programs. There may be more to come out. Just one to keep an eye on. Again, if you are interested in that story, go to those national college basketball podcasts. They probably have the legal team, the necessary LLCs in place to talk about something like this. So go there. Calipari. I wanted to bring up Calipari just because it's the national news and I want to throw some shade his way. Calipari is struggling, and he's also just begging fans to come to games. After... You know, that's what was sold to me, that story. But after I had went back and I watched the tape on it, I didn't hate what he had to say in the video because it was I'm bringing up Cal kind of to show I was doing it to throw shade initially. But when I looked at the reason everybody was throwing shade at him begging students to come to games, I thought, no, this is what Coach Sig did. Arkansas basketball ain't anything to write home about. They just fire their coach. They don't have like a crazy history of winning and, you know, success to fall back on. Yeah, Coach Sig just had to tell the students to stay out there, like, you know, study later. And the video that was making the rounds of Cal gave a lot of the same vibes. I didn't hate it. I honestly didn't hate it. If you saw the video and know what I'm talking about. If you don't, I just went on rambling and stumbling over my words for probably 3 minutes on, yeah, something you couldn't care less about. Drake wins the Charleston Classic. This one you should care about. It's crazy that they won it because it was crazy in the manner in which they won it. Miami, they had played first. Miami finishes last place after Drake beat them, FAU, and Vanderbilt, all by at least 11 points on their way to taking the title of that Charleston Classic. That was just the major MTE event I wanted to bring up because it was a major outcome that warranted being brought up. For some results around the conference, after their big win over Arizona at the Charity Stripe, Wisconsin immediately followed it up last Tuesday with a 87-84 victory over Rio Grande Valley. Never heard of them. You know, this game, it was a close one for them, far closer than it should have been. But in this game, they did have a lone bright spot with Jonathan Blackwell's 30-point performance. This could be his breakout season with this being his sophomore season. You would rightfully think it so. They did then follow that game up by beating a good Pitt team in the Greenbrier Resort in the championship game. So they really have looked pretty good in the time to start here. As far as who looks good in the Big Ten, I would say Wisconsin definitely has the best looking wins. They have the best looking resume right now. Other results around the conference, Purdue's non-conference winning streak comes to an end in resounding fashion as Marquette won at home 76 to 58. Jeez, 76 to 58. Sorry. Cam Jones nets a triple double for the first time since Dwayne Wade at Marquette. In that game, he had 15 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists. Purdue dropped 6 spots in Torvik immediately following that result. Maryland took on 3-3 Villanova, currently sitting at number 66 on Torvik, to the wire, and came out the victors in New Jersey on Sunday, 76-75. Maryland now sitting 2 spots behind Indiana on Torvik at 32. Rutgers loses to Kennesaw State at Kennesaw State. A lot of people out there they're giving credit to Rutgers for scheduling a good mid-major, for going out there and playing at Kennesaw. And I just got to say, get out of here with that. That's a dumb scheduling mistake. That was dumb of them to do. I get it's a road game. Still, come on. Kennesaw State rebounded them to Bolivian. I know I'm saying that wrong, but you say Bolivian. Kennesaw State rebounded them to Bolivia. And 79-77, Rutgers with their first loss. Dylan Harper in that game with 21 points in 35 minutes on 10 for 18 from the floor, and Ace Bailey with 17 points in 32 minutes on 6 for 17 from the floor. And yeah, that's pretty much all the results I wanted to bring up since our last time of recording. Please tune in. I'll keep an eye out open for some others worth bringing up next episode. Let's get on to Burke's Big Five. For Burke's Big Five this week, I was doing the Big Five Big Ten state birds. So these are the state birds of each state affiliated with a Big Ten university. I went through all of them. I wanted to rank my favorites, the top five. We are going to be top of the list. I just wanted to start by saying Wisconsin and Michigan, the common American robin, terrible, terrible bird, terrible, terrible bird choice. The California quail for USC and UCLA, that looks like the dumbest rotisserie you have ever come across. Terrible choice. Number five of the ones I like, Maryland, the Baltimore Maryland. It got their name from the colors chosen, or the colors that the feathers have. They are a close resemblance to the coat of arms of the 17th century Lord Baltimore. Number five, the Baltimore Oriole. Number four, the Pennsylvania, the Ruffed Grouse. The Ruffed Grouse. Tough name. This looks like a groundhog is how I would describe it. I don't know how else to describe it. A groundhog. It makes sense, but it looks like a groundhog that can plume its feathers like a turkey, which is, it's the craziest sounding thing I could say, but just go check it out. Seriously. Cool bird, the ruffed grouse. Number four, Pennsylvania. Number three, Minnesota, the common loon. These things are nothing like special initially, other than diving into water for its food. That's a little lunch pail and hard hat mentality that I can really respect and get behind. But when they turn on the charm, when the ladies start looking, these dudes grow a tuxedo of monochromatic plumage and look fly as hell doing it. Number three, Minnesota, the common loon. Number two, Iowa, the eastern goldfinch. This bird looks like an Iowa Hawkeyes fan, painted yellow and black head to toe. I like it because it looks like a fan of the school that calls its state home. The Eastern Goldfinch is also New Jersey's bird, but no credit to Rutgers because it looks like an Iowa fan. The American Goldfinch is also Oregon's bird, but it also looks like a Hawkeye fan, so no credit to Oregon. Number one, with a bullet, like, obviously, Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, but mostly Indiana. The Cardinalis, a bird so nice, they named it twice. Or the Northern Cardinal, the state bird of Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio. It's a beaut. It's effervescent. The American Cardinal, or the Northern Cardinal. Perfect. Perfect state bird. On to the Flaunted and the Daunted. Starting with your winners for the week, that is going to be the Flaunted. I'm going to start with Wisconsin basketball. I said it before, they are the resume of the Big Ten right now. Winning the Greenbrier, John Tonjes. He's playing like an early Big Ten Player of the Year candidate. Wisconsin is the class of the Big Ten right now, just through who they've had the opportunity of playing. Here's hoping after this event we can be that class, but. Right now, Wisconsin basketball, you got to give them credit where it's due. Miles Rice, the second flaunted subject. I know if no one got me, like, Miles Rice got me, okay? Continue to just be so glad we got such a reliable engine for this thing. Now we just need to get the rest going. And I think Miles Rice can be a large piece in helping the others get going. I mean, he's the point guard, so... here's hoping that we can get the rest out of that, out of the rest of the guys. Indiana, the last one, Indiana stock still climbing, you know, going down two spots, despite how we all felt that UNCG just left a nasty taste in our mouth. We still moved up in the rankings. You know, you can't look too much into preseason rankings, but as long as we are moving in the right direction, you can't knock anything the Hoosiers have done too rough, you know? So that's your flaunted for the week. As for your daunted, I'm going to start out the daunted with SEC football. Ole Miss, Florida ends another team's playoff chances. Ole Miss sucks. Bama loses to Oklahoma. Bama sucks. Texas A&M sucks. SEC football sucks, and they need to quit trying to play politics and play some damn football. Number two daunted, Illinois basketball. Their short stint on the rankings has come to an end as they were bounced following their 187 loss to Bama. Nothing terrible losing to a talented team like Bama. It just hurts like hell to see that number fall from your name. Like, no matter what number, no matter who you lose to, it hurts watching that number fall from your name. No matter how meaningless you can tell yourself that number is to you, it's not. It's not. You care about it. Quit lying. And last, Purdue with their, oh my God, they are just a dynasty. Purdue with their record sixth straight appearance on the daunted list. This is since the inception of the flaunted and daunted segment. Purdue football has been on this list because they haven't won and done anything to get off this list. Purdue football, Ryan Walters, still your coach. Some of you think that losing to Indiana is going to be the best for you because you'll finally fire him. But if you haven't fired your coach after going 1-10 in the Big Ten, I don't know what, if there is anything that could possibly fire him, because there has to be a financial reason you just can't. Purdue football, daunted. On to the Hoosier history hit. Yeah, there's no preview for you, so I already took care of that. Let's get on to the Hoosier history hit, and then we'll get you out of here. Cool. For your Hoosier history hit this week, I wanted to shed a light on something that happened this week in Hoosier history, or in Indiana history, on November 21st, 1941. That was the launching of the USS Indiana battleship. My resource for this is the Indiana State Library. The battleship, the USS Indiana, was launched on this day in 1941 from Newport News, Virginia. While the ship was being fitted out, the Japanese struck Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. The USS Indiana, fully loaded with ammunition and supplies, left Virginia for the Tonga Islands and reported for duty with the Pacific Fleet in 1942. The USS Indiana was nicknamed the Hoosier Houseboat, awesome name, by her crew. According to the August 18, 1945 edition of the Kokomo Tribune, the USS Indiana earned 9 battle stars for her participation in the Asiatic Pacific Service engagements and operations. The USS Indiana's prow and guns are now housed at Indiana University's Memorial Stadium and were dedicated there in 2013. Oh my God, I did not even read that part until I just read that to you out loud. Yeah, the guns outside the front of the Memorial Stadium are the USS Indiana's guns. And that was commissioned this week in 1941. Or, yeah, that's when it was launched. So that was your Hoosier History Hit. Wow, cool. Thank you so much for listening to the Often Daunted podcast. If you haven't followed me across any of the socials I'm on all of them except for TikTok. Follow at Often Daunted. I am a part of the College Huddle Network. It's been awesome getting to work with these guys. Awesome to make the connections I have. Awesome to see where this will go. Thank you so much for giving me the time out of your day, whether it was to watch this, listen, whatever the case may be. If I could ask you for one more favor, leave a like, comment, subscribe. If you're listening on the audio end, please leave a review. 1 through 5 stars, whatever the case may be. Like, hey, if you leave that 1 star, tell me what I can do better. I'll try to do better. That is the thesis of the show. I want each episode to be better than the last. I hope that's what I'm doing here. That is what the goal is. Thank you so much. I hope you and yours have a great Thanksgiving, a wonderful holiday. I hope you watch tons of basketball and eat your heart out. So take it easy. Lux et Veritas. God bless you and yours. See ya, Hoosiers.